Well, indeed, I will present you what some work I've been doing this three years. The work which I did with my former PhD student, Forest Bertrand, a colleague from the Quantum Chaos, Bertrand Georgeau, and the Toronto Regional from the Polytechnique. So I'm sorry that the transparencies are in French, so you will have subtitles in French. I speak English. So.
It's a great way to practice French.
Yes. So first I would like to set the background, the astrophysical background. Why are we interested in inertial waves and more generally in gravitational inertial waves? The first answer is that these waves are beautiful, as you will see. The other one is that when you are interested in the dynamics of stars, then you are facing the problem that all stars rotate, and as soon as you are interested in the eigenmodes of stars, the low frequency part of the spectrum is very much influenced by rotation. And so I have drawn here a small mass star like the Sun, or a large mass star like the quarter mass star with the convective core and a radiative envelope. So these modes, the gravito inertial modes, which are the combination of modes driven by gravity and rotation, are important for the pulsation of rapidly rotating stars. They are important, as we shall see also, for the transport of angular momentum, and this has to do with the rotation, the internal rotation of the Sun, and the synchronization of binary stars. It has also to do with the transport of chemical elements and the abundances of elements at the surface. And recently, these modes, the inertial modes, have been very much studied by people involved in the dynamics of neutron stars because they can be coupled with gravitational radiation.
Okay. So, that's the astrophysical background. Now, what are inertial modes? So these are modes which are eigenmodes of rotating fluids, and the restoring force is just Coriolis force. So why do we need an asymptotic theory? That's because in all the configuration, even in the laboratory configuration, the Ekman number, which is the ratio of the viscous force to the Coriolis force, is very low, is very small compared to unity. And this problem is quite difficult because when you have when you are in such situation where the viscous force is very much lower than the force due to inertia, like Coriolis force, then you have boundary layers. So the usual way to deal with these problems is to compute the zero viscosity solution and then to perturb it with boundary layers and make the asymptotic matching. However, here there is, as we shall see, a basic difficulty is that with no viscosity we are unable to solve the solution because it's singular. And I will present you this now. So if we forget about the viscosity in the first step, we can write the equation of this mode like this. You take Euler's equation in a rotating frame. You forget about the nonlinear terms because you are concerned with the small amplitude motion. And you consider the simplest case, which is the incompressible fluid. So the inertial mode just verified these two equations. And if you look for time periodic solution, then you can remove, so you can express the velocity field in as a function of the pressure field, and you find this equation, which is Poincaré equation, which was in fact derived by Poincaré at the end of the 19th century, when he was interested in the stability of rotating self-gravitating masses. And it's named since Poincaré equation, since the work of Cartan on the same subject in 1922. For these inertial modes, one may show that these are low-frequency modes, which frequency is bounded by the Coriolis frequency, 2 omega. And this property makes the Poincaré equation spatially hyperbolic. That means that if you look to its expression when it's completely when each term is written down, you see that it's just like the wave equation, and instead of time you have the z coordinate, and therefore the equation which is governing the dynamic of inertial modes is mathematically ill-posed, because to this equation you will have to complete it by boundary conditions, and so you have a hyperbolic equation which is constrained in some sense by boundary conditions, and this will generate the singularities, as we shall see. So the first step when you have a hyperbolic problem is to look to the characteristics. Characteristics, I recall what these are. Just take the case of the simple wave equation, which I've written here, in a one-dimensional case. You know that you can make this change of variables, and u and v are called the characteristic coordinates. With such coordinates, this equation transforms into this very simple form, which has this very general solution, which is very well known. And so you can do exactly the same thing for Poincaré equation if you restrict it to the two dimensions. In such case, you find that the characteristics are straight lines which are making a constant angle with the rotation axis, and this angle theta is determined by the frequency of the mode. Now, why these characteristics are important is because they, in fact, physically, they tell you how the energy is propagating when you consider an inertial wave. And so we have been, as a first step, it's very useful to look at how these characteristics propagate in the spherical shell. And I will immediately show you a plot. Here, and you see we have started the characteristics here, and we let the characteristic reflecting on the boundaries and on the axis or the equator, and you see that very rapidly these characteristics converge to what we shall call an attractor, which is not strange. It can be computed analytically, this attractor. It's a periodic orbit, and it turns out that it's very important to know that how these characteristics will propagate. And so, as a first step, we shall study how these characteristics behave in this container, which is the meridional section of a spherical shell. And we shall consider that they act like a dynamical system. Just imagine that it's a ball reflecting on the boundaries. But here we have the special reflection laws, is that the angle with the rotation axis is fixed. And that's the specificity of the system. This angle depends only on the frequency of the mode.
Yes, this structure depends
yes.
on the value of omega 1
yes
you took
oh yes
0.6
yes this value, in fact, it's omega, it's a dimensionless value. No,
yes,
it's omega over 2 omega.
But the eigenfrequency, is that what it is?
It's like an eigenfrequency, but it's not, as we shall see.
But I think when you want
I can take whatever I want, and in the general case, you find...
similar.
Yes, that's a generic case, I would say.
Are you saying you have a continuous spectrum then, or what?
Yes, you will see. I should not get mixed with my transparencies. Okay, so as we deal with this system, we want to characterize these orbits. And one way of characterizing them is to compute the Lyapunov exponent, which is associated with these trajectories. And so we computed this. I recall you that the Lyapunov exponent is defined like this. That's the mean of the logarithm of the derivative of the... So theta n is the latitude of the the n plus 1 reflection point compared to the latitude of the nth reflection point. And what you can show generically is that this Lyapunov exponent is always negative. It may be zero in some places, as we shall see. So all these this propagation, in fact, all these characteristics converge generally towards an attractor. And in fact, the contracting effect of this system is coming from these laws of reflection. So one can compute, for instance, this Lyapunov exponent as a function of the frequency and describe the whole spectrum, since we know that the frequencies are between 0 and 2 omega. So here it is. We see that indeed the Lyapunov exponent is always negative, and you have spikes like this. These spikes, you can in fact compute them analytically. And here I have extracted one example where you have for a given frequency, two kinds of attractors. I will show you them after. And one attractor is rather near the pole, and the other one is near the equator. And what is important here on this figure is to notice that according to the frequency, the Lyapunov exponent can go from zero to minus infinity. And the case where it is minus infinity corresponds to when the characteristics, this branch, for instance, is grazing the inner sphere. In this case, the characteristics is tangent to the inner sphere at what we call the critical latitude, and in fact, the contraction rate of the map is infinite. So the structure of this curve, in fact, is well understood. And we have to keep it in mind because it will be important for understanding the asymptotic spectrum of the inertial waves. So now we have the brief view of the dynamics of characteristics, and I would like to show you why this dynamics is important for understanding the implicit solution of the problem. And for this purpose, I will concentrate on a simpler case when I consider a two-dimensional problem. In this case, you can write the Poincaré equation for instance, the meridional stream function. And you have a simple wave equation, which you can solve in this way. You have you can show that the two generic functions are in fact the opposite, and so the general function is the general solution can be expressed in this way. So f a priori is an arbitrary function. However, it's not completely arbitrary, and one can show on some very simple case, and I will immediately show you a case which was studied by Leo Maas from the Oceanographic Institute in the Netherlands, which was concerned with the problem of gravity waves in lakes and in so in containers rather different than the spherical shell. And so in fact the I would say the canonical problem we have the most simplest the simplest attractor is this case. You consider a bucket like this, which is stratified vertically. And in this case, the gravity waves obey exactly the same equation as inertial waves. And due to this configuration, you can see that characteristics converge to a very simple attractor, which is this this square. Since the problem is two-dimensional, you can you have at hand the solution of the equation, and you can show that this arbitrary function f needs to be specified on some interval along the boundary. And once you have specified this function, then you are able to compute the stream function everywhere in the domain. And so you see one thing is that in this case, all the eigenvalues are infinitely degenerate because you can choose this function f in this fundamental interval arbitrarily. So you have an infinite number of eigenmodes associated with one eigenvalue, if I can speak of an eigenvalue. Because here you see also one thing, is that the scale of the stream function is going to zero as one approaches the attractor. So one can prove in this case that the kinetic energy associated with this stream function in fact diverges to infinity. And that's in fact the singularity of these modes when the viscosity is zero. In fact, you have a divergence of the velocity which is diverging like one over the distance to the attractor. And if you compute the total kinetic energy, you can show that it's not bounded.
Can you actually check what the dissipation rate does as the Reynolds number goes up?
For the moment, my Reynolds number is infinite. I have no viscosity. So that's the next step, to understand how things change when the viscosity is included.
What about the ultraviolet catastrophe you've got?
Sorry?
Sort of ultraviolet catastrophe.
Yes, in some sense. Yes. Yes.
Did you also say that was just G modes?
Yes, that's G modes indeed.
And there's no rotation?
No. But in fact, the equation for G modes and inertial modes is the same when you put it to two dimensions.
This is very like the L-frame vibrations. So typically in that case, if you started with an initial value problem, then it takes you an infinite amount of time to register.
Exactly. Yes. In fact, in this case, you are.
The way it takes forever to actually sort of.
Yeah.
The singularity.
If we were to have a zero viscosity fluid and excite the system with some forcing, it would take an infinite time. And this would blow at an infinite amplitude here. But in fact, the wave would propagate like this, energy would propagate towards the attractor, but it would take an infinite time. Actually, the experiment has been done by the team in Lyon, by Joël Sommeria and Leo Maas. They have excited such a bucket with stratified water, with salt. as a specification, and they actually could put into evidence this attractor. But of course, in the real system, you have viscosity. As I will show, this attractor appears also with viscosity.
So how is the packet being made two-dimensional then?
Oh, the packet is three-dimensional. but you are exciting a sort of fundamental mode. You know the frequency when this attractor exists. So you excite in the frequency band of existence.
But it's not quite a point of this example here because that's, of course, two-dimensional. So I just want to understand how...
But you can make it arbitrarily like that.
It was a packet like this.
It's square, for example. If it's square, it can happen maybe.
Yes, but the third dimension is not important in this case.
Just like the question is law of the fit and the boundary
conditions.
Yeah, is that what it is? No, the bucket was, in the experiment, it was, the aspect ratio was about one.
It was just
like this.
Okay.
In fact, if you come back to the spherical shell, you can. It's easy to show that because of the symmetry of the sphere, in fact, the dependence of the mode towards the third coordinate, which is phi, the longitude, can be taken out because the problem is separable in this direction. And in fact, all the problems come from the two coordinates in the meridional section.
Is there a mode like this for every shape of container, or is it this very special?
No, it depends on the shape. I mean, you can find this. I mean, depending on the angle you choose, here you will have this attractor exists in some range of frequency, which is governed by the geometry of the container.
Okay, suppose we have a general billiard.
Yes, a general boundary. Can you prove the existence of a mode that?
No, it is in general physical. It will go ahead at almost every point on the boundary.
Is that true?
Is that true for every initial condition, or can you?
It's not true that for all containers that you have attractors, because I can give you a counterexample, which is, for instance, the full sphere, the meridional section of a full sphere, so a circle. In that case, you don't have attractors, because you can show that you have periodic orbits if the angle of characteristics is a rational fraction of pi, and if it's not, it's then ergodic orbits.
Because it's like reflection in a building.
Yes.
What the nonlinear dynamics need to be.
Michel, how do they visualize the wave?
In their experiment, it's using fluorescein. I don't know.
Fluorescence,
yes, and laser illumination. And then you can see the motion. The motion was important. Along the attractor, in fact, the fluid is moving there.
Acoustic kind of fluid. I mean, are they in the range that you actually hear it?
No. It's very low. It's below the it's gravity waves. So it was a 5-second period so something like this.
So it's 1.5 hertz, approximately.
Yes. Even lower. Yeah.
And so the packet is shaken from the...
Yes, in fact, they were excited by parametric instability. So that's a common way to excite a gravity waves in a packet. So now, let me come to the role played by viscosity. So that we... In fact, that was the way we discovered all these properties, that we computed these modes with viscosity, and we saw these very nice properties. So we have solved, in fact, this equation where we add viscosity, and here we find the Ekman number, that I mentioned before, and we have been using stress-free boundary conditions. And what have we seen? We have seen that, basically. So here, there are four modes, four different cases, which are very typical, and I will explain a little bit what we see on these pictures. So that's a meridional section of the spherical shell, and it's the kinetic energy which is plotted. Here in blue and green, you see the attractors, which is corresponding to the frequency where we have found the mode. And you see that, for instance, for this one, the attractor is the kinetic energy of the mode is really concentrated along the attractor. And for this frequency, we have two attractors, as I have shown on this previous graph where I showed the... we are exactly in this case, where we have the polar orbit and the equatorial one. So here you can really see the two things, the polar orbit, and which is here, and which is reflecting above the critical latitude, and the equatorial one, which is reflecting below the critical latitude. For another mode, which is a little more damped, you see that you only have the polar attractor, which is excited. In this case, that's an interesting...
Can I just ask a question? So what are how are these compared to the Rossby wave frequencies? Can you give us a sense of the eigenmodes for the rotating shell and how these frequencies compare? These are off-resonance in the R mode for the Rossby wave frequencies?
Well, Rossby waves are an example of inertial modes, using some constraint, geometrical constraint, and some simplifications. So, I mean, these could be really Rossby waves. Here I have taken axisymmetric modes, but the shape of the attractor doesn't depend on the wave number in the azimuthal direction. So
these are axisymmetric?
Yes.
So the Rossby waves are non-axisymmetric?
Yes. But that could be a non-axisymmetric. It doesn't depend on the M. So you can change the M. It doesn't. Attractors are independent of the phi dependence of the function because the problem is separable in this direction. So it doesn't change. So, yes, I was going to mention this case, which is quite interesting, because here you see that the attractor is this one, which is very simple, but you see that actually no energy is around it, in fact. And in fact, the energy is concentrated along this trajectory, which I put in blue, and if you follow the characteristics, of course, after a few reflections, then they fall onto the attractor. Here you have a special case where another singularity is excited, sort of. This is the critical latitude singularity, because around this characteristic, which is tangential to the inner sphere, you have also a singularity which is weaker than the attractor, and in this case, in fact, the viscosity is too large, and the boundary layer which would exist around this attractor is, in fact, inhibited by the boundary here. You can show that the distance between the attractor and the boundary here is too small for the existence of the boundary layer.
See, trying to understand the connection between these characteristics,
mm-hmm.
and a simple mode that I remember, which is... a stationary mode,
yes.
Just perfect limit, say.
Yes.
So would that look in?
In a geostrophic limit, it's a zero frequency mode. So characteristics are just vertical lines.
Uh-huh.
And in this case, I mean, you don't have these singularities because I mean you cannot make attractors.
When you have these characteristics, let's say you have a vertical line that goes and hits the top
spherical. Oh, yes, you can have indeed some.
How does it bounce off?
For instance, if you have a quasi-steady motion, you have these vertical Stewartson layers. Is that what you are thinking about?
No, I'm familiar with sort of solutions as a function of space.
Yes.
Could have time dependence, but that's exponential.
Mm-hmm.
I'm trying to understand what is propagating along the characteristics.
It's the energy of the wave.
It's like WKD limit.
Uh-huh. Yeah, that's
the rays in WKD limit, isn't that true?
Sorry?
Is it true that they so if you go back to the underlying PDE,
yes,
and that has characteristics,
yes.
But if you solve that in the WKD limit, the rays have for the characteristics, isn't that true?
Yes, the ray path for the energy, yes.
Right, and
because here, I must mention something, that for these waves, the energy is propagating orthogonal to the phase. So that's that's making a mess, sort of.
Because you see, it bounces off the surface. I mean, that's a turning point, right?
The energy.
So I would expect what you get from characteristics to hold at, let's say, high frequency or high wave number. But are you saying that this is exact
What is exact?
You're going to actually construct modes from these.
Yes, I will show you. Okay. It's better that I continue explaining. So I was saying that in this case you have the attractor doesn't show up because the viscosity is too large. So, and you see another singularity of this problem, which is the critical latitude singularity. In this case, you have a nice attractor on that. So the point, for the, as I already said, in fact, is that the energy concentrated along the attractors, and it sort of regularized the singularity which we have seen before, and it regularized it by making shear layers. And so the next step is to analyze the structure of these shear layers and see if we can construct them analytically.
So just harking back to what was just said, I'm just trying to understand something. Is it that WKB gives you the right answer for these attractors because close to the attractors you won't have a high wave number?
The problem is that with the WKB, the energy is propagating like this. And in this direction, the wave number is not small. In fact, of the size.
Close to the attractor,
yes.
Going to be correct. Is that right?
Because
close to the attractor, you've got high wavelength. You've got lots of wavelengths.
Yes, but the wavelengths are in this direction. I mean, it's oscillating like this. While you would, if you make the analogy with sound waves, the propagation of phase and energy is in the same direction. So
yeah, but to make WKB valid, it doesn't have to be that. Well,
yes.
The group velocity, right?
That's true, but I mean, in some way, you have to connect the phases. I mean, in order to find the eigenfrequency, which you cannot hear. That's the difficulty. So let me tell you what I have understood about these shear layers. So what we know from literature is that these detached shear layers are usually scaling with the one-third power of the Ekman number. And actually what we see numerically is that the scaling is rather the one-fourth power. So what's happening? In fact, as we shall see, both scalings exist. When you consider the thinnest layer, which is in fact the scale, the Ekman number to the one-third power, you can do an asymptotic analysis, which I briefly described here. And what you find is this equation. So v theta, for instance, is the azimuth of velocity. You find this equation, which has been derived previously by Moore and Sapman, in the case of vertical shear layers, when you have a body which is moving in a rotating fluid, this develops vertical Stewartson layers. And this equation appears also here. So we see that this equation, in fact, is more general than what they have shown, and applies also to to oscillating shear layers. And this equation has self-similar solutions, which express in this way. And what is important to know in these solutions is that they are regular in plus and minus infinity. So this solution allows for detached shear layers. That is, you have a function which vanishes on both sides, which is not a trivial thing to find. If you make the same analysis with the 1/4 layer, which I do here, you find some equation which has this shape, which is a differential equation with constant coefficient, and you know that the solution are exponential. And in this case, of course, you do not have a solution which are regular on both sides of the, plus and minus infinity. So in fact, the solution of this problem is that you have in the middle of each shear layer, you have this this 1/3 shear layer, and which is then bounded by these by two shear layers of with the 1/4 scaling. However, this analysis is not still complete for the moment, because we have a basic difficulty with this problem is that you cannot do a local analysis. In fact, the action of viscosity is local indeed, but the action of the map, the fact that the characteristics are converging toward the attractor, is a global thing. And so it makes the thing quite difficult, and we are right now in the process of finding out how to compute this outer structure of the shear layers. But the important thing to remember is that the structure of these layers, it's nested shear layers. So you have many scaling inside. I show you here how this Moore and Sapman function looks like. So just vanishing like 1/1 the distance. It's a very smooth function, but very interesting. I show you some cross sections of the rays. So it's one velocity, one component of the velocity of a ray. So you can have very simple things like this, or much more complicated things, in fact, like this, where you have many oscillations. So you can really think the rays as being like potential wells, where the inertial wave is trapped, and this trapping is realized by the mapping of characteristics.
Actually, how do you get these velocities?
Oh, that's just numerics. I made a cut through one of these rays. Where is my color picture? So that's this precise one is a cut through this one, perpendicular to this ray. So that's it, and you see that the structure is like a localized wave.
The analogy doesn't strike me as very apt. It's not bouncing around in a potential well, right? I mean, the well is sort of targeting in and being absorbed.
The well is made by the the inertia, in fact, the inviscid forces, and the, by the mapping, because the, I mean, yes, you can think of a wave packet which is propagating in the shell, and this wave packet has its energy which is flowing along the characteristics. And so it's contracted by the mapping, and at some scales, of course, diffusion takes takes
but
over.
Not just that the wave packet propagates in along these things, closer and closer.
Yes.
And it, the amplitude of the wave packet gets bigger and bigger because
indeed.
It's going slower
indeed.
And slower as it approaches.
Yeah, yeah.
This point.
Yes.
In, so it gets squeezed up, and it gets squeezed up. And
yes.
By conservation of energy, that thing comes
yeah, yeah, that's true. Yeah.
And eventually you absorb all the energy that was in the wave packet.
Yes, but...
Independent of the viscosity, right?
Why do you say you absorb everything? In fact, the growing amplitude is shown by the fact that the kinetic energy of the mode is diverging. So that's
yeah. But once you put viscosity into this,
so
whatever energy flows in.
Yes, but so well here I was looking at eigen modes, so. You cannot think to this as a time-dependent problem. So in looking to this problem as an eigenmode problem, it's just like looking for a steady-state solution, as you as if you were exciting the system at the frequency of the mode, and you see the resonance, and these resonances exist, indeed. They have been observed experimentally. And in this case, you have a balance between the focusing action of the map and the anti-focusing action of viscosity. In fact, that's...
But typically, you know, when you shake a box of magnetic field that has the Alfvén resonance in it, that the amount of dissipation of energy in the limit that the viscosity and the resistivity are very small is independent of that. You dissipate energy at a finite rate.
I'm not that familiar with this. It's a linear system.
Into the resonance, right? The propagation of the energy into the resonance. Think of it as a wave.
Yes, but
into the resonance, it gets absorbed.
How?
All that the smallness of viscosity depends on is how far it gets to the resonance.
Yes.
I
don't know your system, so it's hard to.
In the case of an Alfvén resonance, you have a wave with energy flux directed toward a singular layer, okay? And it propagates in there and takes longer and longer and raises steeper and absorbs the energy. But this seems to me to be more of, now I'm going to reveal that I totally don't understand it, but this seems to be more a case where the eigenfunctions are highly localized
in the first place to these characteristic waves. But is that true thing? Like if you do a modal analysis when you have resonance, it always looks like it's localized.
Yeah.
But if you start with an initial value problem where it's smooth and it doesn't have the resonance, and you let it propagate, the resonance starts to build up, and when it hits the point at which you can absorb all the energy by viscosity, then it starts to dampen.
It's really a question of tiny problem that you look at this.
But then if you have a sort of force problem, and then you will reach a sort of steady state where the energy will be flowing into the resonance. I mean,
right, at the rate at which you're putting it in.
Yes, and the amplitude will depend on the balance between the rate of energy you are putting it and the viscosity.
It depends on whatever your viscosity is.
Yes.
The maximum amplitude it reaches depends on how close it can get to the measure.
Mm-hmm. And the lower the viscosity, the narrower the.
But in some sense, the total amount of energy dissipation is just how, is whatever you put in.
Yes. Yes, that's indeed the same.
So in that sense, it depends.
Uh,
I'm trying to make an analogy.
I don't know your system.
So it's very similar. If you look at a box with a magnetic field in it, then the alpha-n waves propagate towards the alpha-n wave resonance. They propagate backwards and forwards from the box.
Yes.
So closer and closer to the alpha-n resonance.
Mm-hmm.
Eventually all the energy is absorbed in the alpha-n resonance.
Mm-hmm.
It's
1D. Okay. So what I've been saying here was just this small model of the wave packet. And this understanding is important in the sense that these modes, in fact, so realize this balance between the contraction action of the map and the diffusion due to viscosity. So when you have such an eigenmode, you have a... You can establish a relation between the Lyapunov exponent, which is representing the contracting action of the map, and the diffusivity. And provided you know the thickness of the shear layers, then you have such kind of a relation, which I've written for the case of a one-fourth shear layer. And in principle, so you are able to find out the dispersion relation of these modes. But that's provided you know the structure of the shear layers, which we don't know right now exactly. But so one important result is that when the viscosity will go to zero, so when the Ekman number tends to zero, all the eigenvalues will move to the frequency where the Lyapunov exponent is zero. And that's the... So now we are in position to say something about the shape of the eye of the spectrum in the limit of very low viscosities. So when the viscosity is strictly zero, then we have seen that most of the modes are singular because they are associated with attractors. And in fact, mathematicians would say that the point spectrum of the operator is empty. However, is that really the case? I would say yes, almost. In fact, there are some still some regular solutions of... In the shape of purely toroidal modes, and these are called also R modes in the astrophysical literature, and also Rossby waves. And these modes are very few in some sense. there is an infinite number of such modes because they are characterized by their frequency, in fact by their azimuthal wave number, which is M. And the simplest one for m equal 1 is just a solid body rotation around an axis in the equator. But except these modes, which are regular, all the others are singular. So in fact, at zero viscosity, you don't have you have almost no modes. Of course, physically, yes, as we already discussed, we cannot speak of modes because you are not able to reach any steady state. In fact, the energy is accumulating around the attractor.
Is this because these modes exist because they don't involve the stratification?
These modes here?
Yeah. The motions on spheres.
Yes. In fact, these modes exist because the radial velocity is zero everywhere.
Yeah.
And this... if you use this constraint, you can change the nature of the equation. And in fact, the characteristics are no longer the one I've shown. And in fact, they do not exert a focusing action.
Are the R modes complete?
Sorry?
Are they complete?
I don't know yet. In fact, that's the only we have found. And I suspect that these are the only ones. But I have not proved that.
Those are the modes which would normally be called modes, in the sense that what you have found look like some kind of singular solutions. And if these odd modes are complete, perhaps they can be formed, your modes can be formed by superposition? No?
No, but it's not no, they cannot, yes. Yeah, yeah.
But what's zero?
Radial velocity.
Yes, the radial velocity of these is zero. So, indeed. However, in real life, we have viscosity, so let's say something about that. So usually, when we are considering eigenmodes, we are most interested in the least damp ones, which are usually playing the main roles in the dynamic of objects. So we have seen before that, in fact, these would converge to the roots of this equation, in fact, to the... So the the values of the frequency such that the Lyapunov exponent is zero. And so we can expect that the eigenvalues will be packed around these roots. And I would like to mention, so these roots, in fact, are, I should show you now the, I should come back to the Lyapunov exponent curve, because this, so that's why it is important. See that, in fact, all these points where this curve meets the horizontal axis are region where you will find eigenvalues. And in this blow up of this region, you would expect eigenvalues around here and around here, the least damp ones. However, there are another set of eigenvalues which is important, is the one when the frequencies are the sign of a rational fraction of pi. In this case, when the sphere is full, the orbit of characteristics are periodic. And In this case, the Lyapunov exponent is strictly zero also. This can be proved. But when you have a spherical shell, then these orbits are in a finite number. In fact, you can show that, I should make a drawing, everything is controlled by the shadow of the inner shell. Yes. So if I draw here the outer thing, so what I call the shadow is this image, in fact, of these of the inner shell, and I will draw the simplest case. And if you choose properly the frequency of the mode, in fact, if it's a rational fraction of pi, then this shadow makes a periodic orbit in the following way. It's doing this. So where is the other one? No, this one is going there. And this one here, etc. So this one goes here, here, and here. So I don't know if you can see something. I will. So that's the shadow. So in fact, all the characteristics which are starting in the shadow remain in the shadow, and those which are starting outside the shadow remain outside the shadow. And for these orbits, which you have a zero Lyapunov exponent, and it's easy to see that these orbits are obviously in a finite number, which is small when the inner sphere is big. Because you need to have this point inside the outer shell. Otherwise, you would have, you can have a sort of a mixture of the things. I mean, you cannot have a one-to-one correspondence between these regions, I would say, because in this region you have parts which are contracting and others which are dilating, and they must compensate exactly. So that's the thing. And also, yes, you can see it rather easily, that if this point is outside, then you have no point where you do not bounce on the inner shell. So that's the reason why you have such frequencies. And in, for instance, in the case where you have, if you take the geometry of the Earth's core, then you can show that you have only three frequencies which are like this, and these correspond to pi over 6, pi over 3, and pi over 4. Pi over 4 is always existing. That's the only one which remains whatever the size of the inner core, because in this case you just have a self-retracing shadow. So from this you can you can also deduce that around these values, these special values, we will have very long attractors, because you have an almost exact compensation between dilation and contraction. So you have very long periods, attractors with very long periods. They are not very attractive in both sense, and small scales appear at extremely low eigenvalues, Ekman numbers, sorry. And that's the reason for that is that in order to have a separated shear layers, you need to have a very small viscosity. So that's a good region for having a least damped modes. And so I show you here how we can think about this asymptotic spectrum. We have some, so that's the asymptotic spectrum, both in, so that's the imaginary part, and that's the damping rate, the real part. And you would expect that eigenvalues accumulate around these special things. And if you go to the lower part of the spectrum, then you are dominated by viscosity, and you find the eigenvalues equally spaced. I mean, because these are eigenvalues of the Laplacian, in fact, basically. So they don't see all these problems. And actually, if you do the numerical computation of this complete spectrum, this is what you see. So I have computed here for...
Sorry, could you go back to the last one and just explain?
Yes.
So the real part is damping rate.
Yes, the real part is the damping rate, so it's negative.
Yeah, yeah. Of the relatively distributed eigenvalues. That's finite. That doesn't depend
on viscosity. It does depend on viscosity. All these depend on viscosity.
So if I take viscosity to zero, those all...
They will all be on the line.
Really?
Yes.
Did your computations show that?
It's necessary. Because the damping rate... That comes from the fact that the scale of the shear layers and of the boundary layers, in the smallest scale you can have in a rotating fluid is the one of Ekman layers, which is scaling like the square root of the Ekman number. And in this case, the damping rate is scaling with the square root of the Ekman number also, so it's vanishing as the square root of the Ekman number. When you have a larger scale, like the one-third power of the Ekman number, then the damping rate is going down as another power of the Ekman number, which I think is two-thirds or something like this. So they are always going to zero as the viscosity is going to zero. That's because if you want to have an eigenvalue which damping rate doesn't depend on the viscosity, you need to be able to make scales which are smaller than the Ekman layer scale. In fact. Otherwise, it's going to zero. So numerically, what we see, we have a little taste of that. These computations are basically wrong, I would say, but because the resolution needs is extreme. I have here varied the Ekman number, so from 10 to minus 5 to 10 to minus 7. And you see that indeed the eigenvalues are concentrating around what I called initially jets, in fact specific values here. And you see that for all the dark modes they are populating obviously rather regularly the spectrum. But all this part is not very well computed. So that's what I wanted to tell you about pure inertial modes, but now let me take 5 minutes to show how all this thing generalizes when you add stratification. And if we take the case of gravito-inertial modes, I just would like to mention first that in a real situation, gravity modes and inertial modes always mixed up if the frequency is sufficiently low, because both of these modes are bounded by either the Brent-Weissele frequency or the Coriolis frequency. So in this region you will have a severe interaction. So now, what's the Poincaré equation becoming? So you add to the previous problem the buoyancy force, and you add the equation of evolution of the temperature perturbation. I consider only a Boussinesq case. In this case you have, so the dynamic equation turns to be this, and if you reduce this problem to its dependence toward the pressure, you find something like this, which is a mixed type equation. So you have in some region an elliptic operator and in some other region a hyperbolic operator. So I will show you now the numerical results. So if you have a low stratification, then you find again inertial modes like the one we have shown. I've shown before. But in other cases, you can have other attractors like this, like this one, which are points, in fact. Here, that's the critical surface, which separates the hyperbolic domain of the elliptic domain. And you see the focusing of the energy around this point. In fact, the general situation, I can show you it here. So four typical cases, the one I've shown before. And when you increase the stratification, here I take the Brent-Weissele frequency of the same order as the Coriolis frequency, in fact equal in this case. And you see that now the characteristics are curved, like here. And you have this possibility of focusing towards a singular point. But again, you have shear layers and the width of which depends on the viscosity and on the diffusion of heat. What is interesting in this case is that if you look to the spectrum, I'll show it here. So that's all the eigenvalues in the complex plane. So here you have the frequency, and here you have the lifetime. So it's the inverse of the damping rate. And you see two regions. This region where you have, gravity modes which are not much perturbed by rotation, and this region, one is the frequency of rotation, where you have a sort of a chaotic distribution of eigenvalues. And these four lines here, they are delineating the interval of existence of attractors. And you see that here, in these two lines, the damping rate is very large. The lifetime is much shorter than just outside this layer. So this is quite important for when you try to understand, for instance, the oscillation properties of a rotating star, because the modes that you will see are necessarily the ones which are the least damped. So they are in this region. In this case, they would be the one of these modes, because they are the most easily excited ones. So you can set bounds on the frequency and on the Brent-Weissele, for instance, the Brent-Weissele frequency. While these other modes, which are associated with attractors, they may be interesting for transporting angular momentum or chemical components. So just one transparency left for the conclusion on astrophysics. So the conclusion is what I already said, is that if you are interested in oscillating properties of stars, you will be concerned with regular modes. And so you have to avoid attractors. And these are the least damped ones. If you are interested in the transport properties of these waves, then you will be interested in the modes associated with attractors, because they are much damped, but they also propagate on very long distance. And for instance, if you think about the transport of angular momentum in the radiative core of the Sun, then you have to carry this angular momentum over a large distance while you are concerned by modes which are rather damped, because they are excited at a special frequency which is rather large. And so these such modes, they could do the job, because they are excited in the same range of frequencies as for instance, the convection at the base of the convective zone. And they can transport momentum on such distances, which are of the scale of the container. So that's why they are very interesting.
What is your rotational stratification?
My rotational stratification?
Yes, differential rotation.
It's none here. Okay. Just solid rotation.
Do you think that you would have very different results if you have differential rotation, because all
That's a good question.
But it is if you're thinking of that, why should that be a differential rotating?
But it's not.
It's not.
Any kind of...
No. What mathematicians suspect is that if you have a differential rotation, you might have another kind of singularities. So, we have not investigated this, but it's a very interesting problem, and we are going to...
The dynamics is generally very different.
Yes.
Differential rotation.
Exactly, yeah. So it's... it needs to be done.
Sorry? Maybe there's critical error. Maybe.
So to conclude, just say a few words about also the problem of synchronizing binary stars, and since this process is also concerned with the angular momentum transport by waves, that could be important also. The mixing of elements, as I already said, and quite recently the problem of the coupling of these modes of inertial modes with gravitational radiation. And in fact, these results, they say that if you are interested in this instability, where the gravitational radiation is able to extract angular momentum from a neutron star, then you have to consider, you just need to consider the toroidal modes, the ones which are the only regular one, when the viscosity is going to zero, because the other ones are too much damped by the shear layers. Okay, that's, I'm finished.